Borodaryn, good morning, everybody. My name is Auriel Miller. I'm the director of the IWA, and I'd like to welcome you to the latest edition of Rethinking Wales. For those of you who don't yet know the IWA, we're Wales's leading independent think tank. We have a long track record of shaping debates and influencing change in Wales through our policy research and advocacy, our online and print publications, and I'm going to wave at you the latest copy of The Welsh Agenda, which is the longest standing current affairs magazine in English in Wales. We provide platforms for robust comment and debate, events like today, as well as our agenda setting events. We're a membership organisation with members right across the country and much further afield. We're funded by our members, the events we run ourselves, and independent trusts and foundations. This is the 17th in our Rethinking Wales panel discussions, and we'd very much like to thank the National Lottery Community Fund for supporting us in this chunk of the series. A little bit of housekeeping before we get started. It's a webinar, so you won't be able to see everybody else who's in the room. So we really do encourage you to say hello. My dog has just said hello to each other, and also adjust your names to and add the organisation or the part of the country that you're joining us from. We're going to use the Q&A section for questions. If you'd like to direct your question to a particular panelist, do please state their name. We also encourage you to engage with each other in the chat. We sent around a list of participants so you know who in advance who signed up to attend. Please do remember that all chat and questions are recorded, and we're going to be keeping the event strictly to an hour to avoid Zoom overload, but we'll be keeping the chat room open for a little bit after the end of the session if you want to carry on the conversation. So the hashtag is Rethinking Wales, so do please use that. We're going to be live tweeting today's conversation too. This week has seen the publication of the programme for government, and one element of the programme, which has been a consistent theme for Welsh Labour policy since the election of Mark Drakeford as leader, is the creation of a community-owned bank for Wales. Today is going to be a chance for us to explore what that actually means and what it might look like, but also to reflect on the situation that's made this into a key area of government policy. In earlier Rethinking Wales sessions, we have discussed the extensive impact of COVID-19 on Welsh high streets and the long-term implications of things like the rise of online retail. But perhaps the most impactful change to the high street has been the dramatic decline of bank branches. In the 5 years to 2020, Wales lost 40% of its bank branches. Bank branches are much, much more than cash points. They're sources of advice and access points for a whole range of services and of savings and loan services. For many small businesses, they're also an essential part of managing cash flow, as well as a source of investment. These closures have therefore left Wales in particular at a disadvantage, with sparsely populated areas being particularly hard hit. Many of the most well-known high street banks claim that closures are the result of a fall in demand, as many more people turn to online banking for managing their money. Many young people are less likely than ever to visit a branch, often preferring to manage their money online. But as with other aspects of the digital transition, there is a huge risk of leaving a great many people behind. Today, we're going to be exploring the changes that have brought us to this point and some of the solutions that are being proposed to support the response. I'm delighted to be joined by a panel that has a range of expertise and insights into the Welsh banking landscape, and I know there'll be lots of people in the audience here also able to add their experience too. I'd like to welcome, and they're going to put their videos on as I say hi, I'd like to welcome Tegid Roberts, who's a director of Bank Cambria. Established in 2020, Bank Cambria aims to provide a full banking service across Wales, but unlike many high street banks, it will be owned and controlled by its membership, not by outside stakeholders. So welcome, Croeso Tegid.
Thank you.
Ben Joachim is head of strategy at the Principality Building Society, and the Principality is among Wales's most recognisable businesses and manages over £10 billion worth of assets, serving customers throughout Wales and beyond. Ben's also on the advisory panel of FinTech Wales, which is an independent voice for the fintech industry, helping to champion the sector within Wales. So welcome, Ben.
Good morning, thank you.
Valentine Mulholland is Senior Policy and Propositions Manager at the Money and Pension Service, which is an arm's length body sponsored by the Department for Work and Pensions. The Money and Pension Service works to ensure that everyone in the UK can easily access the information that they need to make the right financial decisions for them throughout their lives. So welcome, Valentin. Nice to have you with us.
Hi.
Thanks very much indeed to you all for being with us today. We're going to hear from our panelists in a minute, but we also want to hear from you in the chat room and on Twitter using the hashtag Rethinking Wales. We've reached nearly 1,500 people over the last year with these conversations, so please keep the conversation going. You can include your questions in the Q&A function, and we'll be taking a good chunk of time at the end of the session to put these to the panelists. So I'm just going to make sure I've got the chat open and I can see what's going on. There we are. And I would like to start with you, I think, Tegid, please. Tell me a little bit about Bank Cambria, because I want to hear really about what's influenced the founding of it as an organisation and what kind of problems is it trying to solve?
Well, Mark Hooper and myself were approached by the CSBA, which is the Community Savings Banking Association, about 3 years ago now, the idea of creating a bank owned by its members in Wales and using a model that they had. And at the time, I'd been banking with a very large bank, global bank that started off as the Midland Bank and ended up as HSBC. And over the years, my father and my mother ran a business, and I have been running a business for 20 years. And my contact with the bank has lessened and lessened and lessened. And even living in West Cardiff, bank branches have closed. The one in my village is closed. The one in the village nearest to us is closed. The one in the other village next to us has closed. And access to banking has reduced and reduced. And although my background is technology, I'm ex-Sony Research and Development, and I have an app on my phone, there are times when I do want to speak to somebody and consistently speak to the same person each and every time I have contact, whether it's on the banking, retail banking side or the business banking side. So Mark and I started to write up a proposal that we thought was reasonable for Wales. We saw that huge amounts of Wales were losing their bank branches as well, particularly in rural areas. We've got examples of towns that have lost 6 bank branches. A small town of 10,000 people have lost 6 bank branches. And, you're going to have to get in a car and travel an hour or more to the next bank branch. And that's unacceptable. There's no reason why bank branches can't exist. We've built a model that we think is viable, where the bank branches that we want to open will be relatively small. They'll be in the more rural areas. We're not going to have one, a massive branch in the centre of Cardiff. We're going to concentrate when we open on the more rural parts of Wales, and we hope to open 50 initially, and then we will roll out more as we can. There's no reason why we can't do this, because as a mutual, we have no shareholders, we have no dividends to pay, and we have no stock options to distribute. So that profitability that large banking has will be kept within the organisation and used for the community's benefit.
And can you talk to me about the financing of the bank, Tegid?
So we are limited with what we can say at the moment, because we've got an announcement that will go out towards the end, in the autumn. But what we've done is we initially started as a ground-up bank, and we realised quite quickly, as a challenger bank, that it would take 4 years and many tens of millions in order to set up. So we were approached by an institution in Wales, I can't name at the moment, to partner with them. Now, they have advantages over we. They already have a banking license. They have a relationship with the regulators. And what we're doing is we're working together in order to roll this out. And the crux of it is to make sure that we have a current account. So there are building societies in Wales, but they don't have a current account. And there is no other bank in Wales that has a current account. And that is fundamental to what we're doing. A current account in the UK retail space makes about £400 a year per count on fees and all sorts of other things and interest as well. And if you think about £400 multiplied by, you know, 2 million, however many people there are in Wales with current accounts, that's an enormous amount of money leaving Wales. The Welsh economy, 75 billion, and we're losing about a billion a year in retail funds. I've lost my train of thought there. In current account fees. Yeah. Okay, if we are able to keep that money in Wales, then there will be a distinct advantage.
I'm going to come back to you for your elevator pitch, because answering the problems that it's trying to solve is what I want to come back to you on. Valentin, let's come to you next, because one of these things, and it's come out in the conversation with Tegid just there, is about how a community bank might help people who are struggling to manage their finances. Looking at where Wales is now, both in terms of levels of poverty and deprivation and the impact of COVID, you know, your organisation, the Money and Pensions Service, is working to support people who are struggling to manage those day-to-day finances. How important do you think that physical presence is of a branch for the people that you support? You're on mute, I'm afraid, Valentin.
How can I be doing this after 15 months?
It happens to us all.
It does very much depend on the characteristics. So we know that 76% of account holders are now comfortable with online banking. So we're talking about those who are not comfortable, and we know that digital exclusion is a particular issue for the more vulnerable, for more vulnerable consumers. So we're talking about those people. And actually, that also there's an element of digital exclusion in Wales, which is also about broadband connectivity. So even, you know, for those people who'd like to be included and where that's not a reliable source. In terms of people managing money effectively, I would say that there's three key areas where access to banking and access to a bank branch, if that's all you're going to have, is key. One of those is being able to be clear about how much money and you know, checking how much money you have, your balances, etc. And we know that, you know, there's evidence that some people on low incomes are doing that, are checking their balances on a daily basis, and also are taking money out on a daily basis in order to manage and budget in that way. So there is an alternative to bank branches in through the post office. So we know that the vast majority of bank accounts can be operated through post offices. So you can deposit money, you can withdraw money, and you can check your balance. But that's all you can do. But obviously, access to post offices is also an issue that we're seeing, the closure of post office. And what's critical is for those who are on the lowest income, saying the nearest bank is 3 miles away or the nearest post office is 3 miles away, is still going to be inaccessible. And, you know, 3 miles away journey in some parts of rural Wales could still take you half an hour and can be quite expensive as well. So that's a really key point. And the two things that you're not going to be able to access through a post office alternative is, and I think you mentioned it earlier, and I think Tegid did as well, is that access to savings and to affordable loans, loans at a reasonable price. And a lot of people carry out both those transactions through their bank. We know that, you know, those who are digitally engaged might do that in lots of other ways. The credit union sector in Wales is really, really vibrant, and the Welsh Government has put a lot of investment and support for that. So that's an alternative. But for those who aren't accessing credit unions, not having a bank branch can mean that they're not going to have those more, that encouragement to save. And for financial well-being, having a safety net for when, you know, for big expenses, for when life knocks you over and with an unexpected cost, is absolutely critical. And if you haven't got those savings, then access to credit when you need it is critical. And that's where we think bank branches are essential to financial well-being, particularly for more vulnerable consumers, and where the concern is about that decline in access.
I suspect we might come back in the chat to the role of credit unions in that mix as well, but let's save that for later. Ben, Prince Palace has obviously got a really long history of providing banking services. And one of the things that's come out, and Valentin pulled that into the conversation very clearly is around the challenges of digital and particularly the changes that that means for the high street and the new challenges on top of everything else. Could you talk us through how Principality are responding to those sorts of changes and what you're also kind of prefiguring for staying ahead of the curve, please?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, as a building society, obviously, we don't see ourselves as a bank necessarily. We provide some banking services, but we're a mutual organisation. We're owned by our members. But, you know, the shift that we've seen from the high street to digital has certainly been gathering pace. And obviously, over the last year or the last kind of 15, 18 months. And I think this will continue, and it will continue across the different customer segments, and what we're seeing is more of our members, more of our customers are using digital channels, and therefore we need to respond to this. So our strategy is that we continue to invest in digital and data, because I think understanding our customers goes beyond that branch relationship. How do we leverage digital? How do we leverage data to understand our customers' goals, their spending habits, their desires, and therefore, how do we translate that into the support? What we know is that we've provided, you know, standout experience through our branches for over 150 years, and we want to retain those branches, and we're certainly really, really proud of our high street presence, and from our perspective, we want to keep our branches open as long as we can, and as long as they're being used. I think that role of branches will start to evolve. And obviously we continue to invest in our branches, and so it's trying to find that balance between, you know, obviously ensuring that customers have that direct support on the high street, but that we're also replicating that in a digital world.
So it's a different kind of both and then, isn't it, from that perspective? Tagged, let's come back to you. You know, you're clearly seeing a future for high street bank branches. How are they going to be different to the banks of the past? How are they going to adapt, and what will that look like? I mean, Ben's talking about know thy customer. Tell me a bit about how that fits with what the branches will look like in the very different parts of Wales. You talked about starting small and focusing on rural. I can see the logic behind that, but tell me a little bit more about that evolution.
So the services we offer will be across the board. We will have an app. We've already got an app ready. We will have a different size bank branch depending on the size of the location. So some of them are ATMs, but you can put money in, and then there's a video link. And then what we plan to do is to have relationships with local authorities where we can put these units into, and these small branches into, local authority owned buildings, and also we hope to put these into smaller areas. We don't have the legacy challenges that a lot of banks have. We won't need vaults, we won't need large infrastructure, so we were going to cut our cloth to the area that's required, and the bank branch as it can will evolve. So we hope to have a larger branch in larger areas and small branch in smaller areas. But the idea really is that, you know, if you get in your car 20 minutes away, you'll be able to get into a bank branch for 95% of the Welsh population. That's our goal.
Okay, it's a different.
But that doesn't mean we won't have a digital solution. So I use my app a lot, but the main reason I use my app is because I can't get to a bank branch. And although the post office does offer lots of services for banking, there is at least a day or two delay. So if I put a check into the post office, there's one or two day delay before it gets to the bank. So you're increasing the clearing time. It's, you know, from 4 days to 6 days, and if that passes over a week, and for people on low incomes, that could be pretty challenging. If you're being paid with a cheque because you've got a very basic bank account or you don't have reliable online banking, and that is not the case for everyone in Wales. I mean, we're in West Cardiff. Well, I'm in West Cardiff, and my internet access is pretty good here. But my 4G, if I go to the village in Craigie, the 4G there is terrible, absolutely terrible. So, you know, and then if you're in the more rural parts of Wales where, you know, 2G is challenging, never mind 4G, then, you know, you can see where the challenges get you know, acute quickly.
I want to pick up on a couple of things. That video link that you talked about in the smaller branches, where will that go to?
That will go to a central a call centre, so people will be able to talk to people. So that's for the smallest solution. But we will also have, you know, bank branches where you can go in and you can speak to somebody.
So we'll a real life person.
We'll have, yes, it will have different size. Branches for different size places.
So at this point, I'm going to do an unashamable plug for the project that we've been part of with a bunch of partners called Understanding Welsh Places, which I would expect both Principality and Bank Cambria to be using to have a story about that place's past, its present, and what the people of those places want their future to be looking like. And I'm hoping that the IWA team, somebody can put that link in the chat, please. And for those of you who are here today who haven't yet come across UWP, I'd ask why not. It's a really good way to understand what's going on in your place, bringing together publicly available data about more than 300 places in Wales with more than 1,000 people living in them from an assets-based perspective. Highly recommended. Thank you, Maria. Thanks, Tegid. I'm going to move on to Valentin. I want to know a little bit about what, if anything, regulators like the Financial Conduct Authority could be doing to monitor the impact of branch closures across Wales. It's clearly not a problem which is unique to Wales either, but could you tell me a little bit from your perspective around that regulation piece?
Yeah, so the Financial Conduct Authority has become sort of increasingly engaged in this, and particularly around a lot of the work around access to cash. So it's kind of associated as well with, you know, we've got the closure of bank branches, we've got an increasing move towards pay ATMs where you have to pay a fee. So that concern about the most disengaged, the most marginalised. And the FCA, the Financial Conduct Authority that regulates banks and financial services, did published guidance on branch closures in September 2020, which sort of requires firms to have really clear plans for what the alternatives are going to be where a community is going to be left without a bank branch. And in some cases, we know that some banks are developing kind of hubs where you can go, you know, you can attend somewhere and contact your bank. In some cases, online banking, but there's mobile banking. But we know that that's not, you know, that's quite a mixed picture because they often don't stay for very long where in one location. So the FCA does look at that, but it's guidance. It's not part of their strict rules. And there's also the Lending Standards Board, which is a voluntary grouping of people who lend money and banks and building societies, has also got an access to banking standard as well, so that banks have signed up to this access to banking and say that they will go through particular processes before they close a bank. And importantly, that they will consider what's going to be the impact on the most vulnerable people in that community. And if that can't be mitigated, that actually, you know, maybe that's not what they should be doing. I think it's quite difficult to believe that that's going to lead many banks to reconsider their proposals. And in fact, the FCA, just a couple of months ago, actually wrote to the chief executives of all the banks saying, you know, we issued this guidance last September saying you needed to take this into account. COVID presents some particular challenges where we do need people to be able to access a branch, but actually some banks have been using that as an excuse to accelerate branch closures on the basis that actually that there's fewer people going in, and the FCA saying, you know, that's problematic and we need you to not do that and hold off. So the FCA are looking at it.
Can I just ask, what powers do they have to compel the banks not to close? Any at all?
I think it's guidance, so they don't have powers. I think it is about reputation and influence and the fact that Treasury are very concerned about this access to cash, particularly, and access to banking. So I think it's more in the relationship space. And that, yeah, that's what I was going to add, is I think the FCA don't have big enough teeth in this, really. And it's very difficult because, you know, what we know is where branches are being closed in areas where the kind of transaction levels don't justify keeping a branch going. And that's the difference with, you know, the Bank Cambria proposal, which would be a publicly owned or mutual. If you're looking at shareholders, it's quite difficult when actually the kind of transactions are very small transactions in a particular small town to make a business case. And it has to be a business case that takes into account social impact rather than shareholder priority, which is where, you know, Bank Cambria has an advantage, obviously.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, toothless tigers in terms of regulators is a theme across the board in a number of sectors, isn't it? Ben, you're also on the board of FinTech Wales. We talked about that at the beginning. And a lot of people see FinTech and community banking as operating in very different spaces with different purposes. Can you tell me about stuff that they could learn from one another, please?
Yeah, so I joined Principality at the start of this year, and I've just been appointed as a non-exec to FinTech Wales. Prior to that, for the last 4 or 5 years, I was building a challenge bank for the aid industry, for international aid or foreign aid. And so I guess, you know, I've seen kind of financial services through or kind of the wider FinTech space through a number of different lenses. And look, there are upsides and downsides and benefits to or advantages and disadvantages to on both sides. I think, you know, for legacy financial institutions, you know, they have that, you know, they have that history, they have that experience, and you know, and that comes with a reputation and trust that's built up, in our case, over 160 years. For fintechs that are starting out, you know, they have that clean start, that fresh start, the ability to build, you know, build teams, build culture, and build products from scratch. I think, you know, from when we look at it kind of from fintech to the community world, you know, fintech certainly has a lot of experience in terms of how to deploy technology at scale, how to drive that efficiency and the effectiveness. But on the flip side, you know, from a community banking perspective, you know, we have the experience of how to build those long-lasting relationships and build them around purpose and around community. But I don't think that value goes one way. I think these organizations can play both roles, and I think both roles is really important. And I think in a Welsh context, those lines are even blurred further. The organizations that we work with through FinTech Wales, for example, you know, yes, they're wanting to build, you know, big technological companies, but they also want to have an impact. They want to have an impact on their communities. And the reality is, if we're going to do that, if we're going to impact on our communities and our customers, going back to the point I made before, we need to understand those customers. And that needs both, you know, great technology, both great data services, but also great customer experiences. And so I think there's a huge amount that we can learn on both sides. And that, as I say, that value goes both ways, for sure.
And I guess, you know, I'm going to follow on, Tegid, to a question from that in terms of what sort of those sort of cross-sector learning conversations have you been part of, feeding into the setting up of a new financial institution like Bank Cambria? That's kind of first part of the question. I'm going to come back to you with a part two of the question, but let's just start with that first.
So what was the question?
So Ben's been talking about those, you know, the digital and data tech side of things and that rollout and scaling up and the efficiency of that, but also knowing the customer base that you're serving. And I just wondered, you know, your kind of consultation processes and conversations with other actors and other players in this sphere in Wales and elsewhere. Tell me about what you've learned a bit from those that has influenced the setting up of Bank Cambria.
Well, Bank Cambria has to be digitally competent. No one is going to accept a new banking enterprise in Wales that doesn't have an app, that doesn't have considerable amounts of technology behind it. So although we will have branches and they'll be of various sizes, the core of the business will still be technological. The app that we've developed is incredibly similar to another, you know, I have a Santander app and I've got an HSBC app, and our app is going to be very similar. Very similar. It won't look the same. It'll be multilingual. It's going to be in Welsh and in English, but it'll be the same. And from that, we can gather the data that Ben is referring to, and we can apply some big data, a bit of AI. One of the other things I do is I work with Swansea University on an AI project at the moment. So, you know, I'm fairly well versed on the technology required. But we still need that day-to-day service that we can go into the centre of a village or a town in Wales, go to a shop, buy things, pop into the bank to discuss a challenge that we have with our day-to-day lives. I really think that's an important. One third of people in Wales want a bank branch. And 90% of banking in Wales is done with large global institutions who are intent on removing branches from Wales, although their profitability as a bank would allow them to keep them open. And they have definitely used COVID as an excuse to close them, because people haven't been using the bank branches. And if people aren't using the bank branches, then they use that as an excuse to close them.
So there are a number of challenges, aren't there, in terms of setting up the a financial institution. So let's just sort of dig into that a little bit more, because, you know, from an IWA perspective, we're interested in what this means for policy shaping, but also implementation of that policy, obviously a key challenge. So that issue that you've just talked about in terms of is one of those key challenges, obviously, for you. What are the other key challenges, and what kind of support can policymakers offer in that space?
So what we've done is we've partnered with an institution in Wales, and together with them we've put together a proposal, and the proposal has gone in front of the Welsh Government and the Wales Pensions Partnership. And between those two institutions, they have agreed in principle, and they're going through a large due diligence process now to provide us with the funding that we need in order to be able to do this. And it's substantial amounts of funding. We're talking millions of pounds. And they will be members of Bank Cambria, and it's, you know, one member, one vote. So even though it's millions of pounds, they'll only have one vote each. So that's important to say. And the other thing is, we're going through the PRA process at the moment. We don't need to start from scratch because the institution that we're working with already has various banking licenses.
But can you just explain PRA to people on the call?
Well, it's a prudential. It's part of, so the FCA and the PRA are the banking regulators in the UK, and the PRA is the body that regulates the banks themselves in terms of their suitability in order to run a bank, and also if you want a banking license, it's with the prudential regulator that you will apply to. But we're not starting from scratch. We're not a challenger bank in that regard. In fact, the governor of the Bank of England mentioned us a couple of weeks ago. So there is support for what we're doing within the Bank of England. And this is actually seen as a potential model for a new type of challenger bank. So to take an institution that already exists and allow them to work with them in order to provide, you know, a better banking service, mutually owned within, you know, so this is a potentially a model that could go across the whole of the UK.
So Wales being a petri dish, yes, where new things are being tried, yeah, that others can learn from. We at the IWA, we always like that kind of,
yes,
that kind of approach, obviously.
And that's actually quite exciting, because this is something that could be quite transformative.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. Valentin, we've talked about today during the conversation, you know, high online banking is already the future from that perspective, and the importance of retaining a physical presence. Can we just dig into the issues around digital inclusion a little bit more, please? And can you tell me about either clever and innovative things you've seen whether in Wales or elsewhere, to improve digital inclusion. Digital is very difficult to say, I find. Digital inclusion, I have to enunciate very clearly. From the point of view of, obviously, you know, the most vulnerable, because it will only ever be as good as, you know, whatever is offered, it will only ever be as good as reaching the people who really need it from a day-to-day perspective. Can you give me some ideas of some flavour about good stuff you've seen and that you would like to see in Wales?
I think, I mean, a lot of the digital market is UK-wide, because obviously, you know, you can get an app from anywhere in the UK. I think there are people who, whatever we do, it will be quite difficult to kind of break that digital barrier. So some older people, although we're increasingly seeing a lot of older people who are very digitally confident, and some people who've got cognitive abilities, etc. So I still think that there's a role for digital skills development, and digital skills development now is so key to financial well-being. You're not going to get some of the best deals if you're not digitally engaged. So and I think, you know, regardless of whether you've got bank branches, if you're looking for a loan at the moment and you just approached your bank, it will probably be okay. But if you're able to do comparisons online, you'd get a much better deal. So we do need to see governments investing, and I know the Welsh government has done that, and I know there is investment, but I think in digital skills that really overcomes those barriers. We're also seeing some of the banks taking that on directly. So quite a lot of the adverts on telly at the moment from mainstream banks are around their digital support. And I think COVID has really brought that to the fore. So when I was saying 76% of people are currently linked into an online banking, that was 2020 figures. I could not find yet the 21 figures. That's going to be really interesting to see. So banks have kind of put quite a lot of effort into that. But then I think there are fintechs who are very good at bridging that digital kind of barrier. And quite a lot of people, I mean, we know that there's a lot of evidence. Lloyds do a consumer digital index every year. They do UK-wide, which looks at what the barriers are. And what they find is a lot of people do use a smartphone for social media, but they're not prepared to use it for anything else. They're not confident. Mm-hmm. They're worried. And some fintechs are really good at overcoming those fears. So that's about developing apps that really speak to the way people engage with social media. So what is it that makes them feel comfortable about Facebook and WhatsApp, but doesn't make them feel comfortable? And so we've seen, for example, some apps that are offering what they call current accounts, where people get their benefits or their salary paid in, that aren't actually banks, but that, and it's interesting because all those people could have a current account with a bank, but actually something about that is appealing to them, and it's the simplicity and how it's presented. So some of it's about that. And the other thing which I think is really valuable is what's called assisted digital. So people who have, you know, who have an offer, who have a product digitally, but where when you start to struggle, you can break off your digital journey and start to speak to somebody, and that person might get over what you're struggling with, and then you can return to your digital journey. And I think assisted digital is a way for people to gain the confidence to do stuff digitally. I mean, you know, my mother's got 2 degrees and is in her 70s. And this weekend I tried to set her up on online banking, and it was pretty hard. You know, it was pretty hard, and she's hard of hearing, and the contact center was in India and she can't understand them. So there's an awful lot for mainstream banks to do. I think a lot of the fintechs, particularly now, the early fintechs were techie young men. And I think that's moved on so much. I'm much more focused now on looking at the clients they need to reach. And they're not just looking at the very wealthy clients, they're looking at different products. So I think innovation in itself will come up with some solutions, but we're going to have a hardcore of people that will still need to be able to walk somewhere and speak to somebody face to face.
That's interesting about the design of things. So like anything, you know, people who something is aimed at need to be involved in the design of it. It's just plain good old common sense, you know, and it goes everything from race to gender, to disability, to everything.
I mean, I think
people around the table, it's just not going to work.
I mean, I really, we've got this UK strategy for financial wellbeing, and one of the biggest issues is around people with mental health problems, and that people really get into difficulties because they've got some kind of, you know, some kind of issue. And what we're pushing for is to say that products need to be designed with that in mind, because that could be any of us at any point. Yeah. And actually, we know that people with mental health problems get into much more financial difficulties, and financial difficulties in themselves exacerbate mental health problems. So that kind of inclusive by design is absolutely critical.
Thank you. I'm going to give a last question here to Ben, and then I've got a stack of questions from the audience. So Ben, community bank in the works, also the development bank recently established, as well as your own organisation, which has been around for a little while longer, and a strong credit union. I know there's a comment from Mark White on the chat that there's a real range now of both saving and lending opportunities within Wales. So I want to just say, you know, is there a bit of a risk that these organisations end up competing one another to the detriment of the people that they're trying to serve?
Well, I think firstly, competition is a really good thing. I think competition is really important. It's good for our customers in terms of how we can drive value and improve services and ensure that we're providing them with what they need. I think competition is also good for the high street, ensuring that we can have a buoyant high street and vibrant communities. But if we're going to have competition, I think competition needs to be on a level playing field. And you know, I'm thoughtful that if government is going to take an interventionist approach, that they have a responsibility to ensure that that level playing field exists. And that they should be able to encourage innovation across the board. But I think what we need to do is understand the overlaps when we talk about competition, and understand that, you know, when we think about in the context of savings and lending, for example, that there's a big spectrum within that. It's not just one product, one savings product or one mortgage product, let's say. And so when we look at, you know, competitors and understanding what are their services, you know, potentially there may be some overlaps between DevBank and Cambria. You know, you'd hope not if they're both Welsh Government funded. You know, there are some overlaps between what we do on a commercial lending perspective with what DevBank are doing. And, you know, Teg has already, you know, articulated, you know, the current account focus with Cambria, and we're very clear that we don't provide a current account, and that we're focused very much on savings and lendings. But I think we also need to understand what are the markets that we're looking to serve. Obviously, Principality is, you know, as a 160-year-old financial institution or building society with that history and a heritage in Wales, but. And we also have, you know, the biggest physical presence across Wales, but our focus isn't just Wales. We lend a significant amount of our mortgage portfolio into England. But I think, you know, I think in Wales we're sometimes accused of kind of operating within silos, as you know, within different industries. But that collaboration is really important. And, you know, we've had conversations with Bank Cambria, you know, prior to me joining over the year, and explored different ways that we can partner. And so, you know, I think there's a lot that we can learn from each other as well. And so that notion of competition isn't as clear cut, or, you know, it's not cutthroat in that regard. And that we want to create, you know, a collaborative ecosystem, a collaborative environment across Wales.
Okay, thank you. Teg, I'm going to come to you with a question from Nick Clifton, who says, are there examples of the kind of challenger stroke replacement model in other places outside Wales and indeed the UK? And if so, what have been the main issues and solutions? Obviously, you know, he's saying that regional banking is much more of a thing in places like Germany, for instance.
Yes, two-thirds of banks in Germany are you know, local banks, and also the, you know, their development bank network is considerably larger than it is here. Within the CSBA, so the organisation that we've been working with, there are other challenger banks that are set up in the same similar model in the UK, in the west of England, up in the northeast of England, and some in London, and we've been, you know, we have been working, but at the moment Bank Cambria is the one that's ahead of all of them. So in terms of the UK, we will be the first over the line. If we look at community banking in other parts of the world, so Santander, although they are reducing the bank branches in the UK, they have enormous community banking facilities in South America, for instance. I mean, they've got bank branches absolutely everywhere. And that has been a core to the Santander model for many decades. The UK has become a bit of a problem when it comes to provision of banking. So if Santander are reducing their portfolio in the UK, then, you know, this is a huge challenge to us, because they're certainly not doing that in other parts of the world. I mean, one of the disadvantages of some of the challenger banks in the UK is they've had to raise substantial amounts of money. We're talking 50, 60 million. And also the PR process that they've been running through has been very extended, 4 or 5 years. And one of the reasons we partnered with an institution that already exists in Wales, a Welsh institution, is so that we can get over the line quicker. And we've managed to reduce that time from 4 years down to 2 years. So, you know, that's, and 2 years is, you know, from my point of view, long enough.
Okay, I'm going to move on to a question here from Adam Howell, who's raised a really important issue about skills. And I think, Valentin, you touched on this earlier, and how young people actually gain skills by engaging with banks face to face. Is there a wider issue, do you think, about changing skills in the Welsh banking sector? Do we have the skills to provide the kind of variety of services that we've been discussing today, both in person and in digital? That's for all the panel. I may not get round you all because I'm conscious of time, but Valentin, let's start with you on that one.
I think I'm probably more able to respond on the children and young people part of it, because great. We're very clear that the best way to ensure that people have the personal skills to manage money effectively in the future is educating children and young people. And we believe that all children and young people should have a meaningful financial education. And we're actually working with the Welsh Government and in partnership in Wales to deliver a number of activities which are around financial education of young people, but also through parents. So some of those activities, one we call Talk, Learn, Do, which is actually about very young children, is about teaching parents how to talk to their children about money. And some of those interventions do rely on there being some kind of element of cash, you know, that it's, you know, I mean, although there are increasingly there's some really good apps now for young people and children and young people like GoHenry and others that that encourage financial capability. But for very young children, it is about understanding the tangible concept of cash. And I think you're right that in that question, that sort of going into bank branches and you know, modelling that, you know, as children, modelling what happens, those transactions, putting money in, taking money out, etc., just to understand what that is. But I think in financial education, then we're responding, you know, to what we do, which is around a new environment where actually children aren't going to see much cash and they're not going to see an interaction with a financial professional. But how do they learn about the value of money, about savings, and about how you manage money effectively? But I will defer to my banking colleagues about the skills in staff there.
I'm going to come to you, Ben, in on this. I mean, as a parent, one of the ways I'm teaching my kids about money is the chocolate tax. Obviously, 20% of the chocolate goes to the parent first, like the government. But also, I've already said this on Rethinking Wales, so it's no great news, but my kids do have a principality account, actually, and look at how they are accumulating pocket money or birthday money and what they're deciding to spend it on. And I think, yeah, I agree with you on from that perspective, Valentin. Can you talk a little bit, Ben, about this thing around skills? Valentin's talked about young people in particular. What else?
Yeah, so I think, you know, from a principality perspective, you know, skills and education for our young people across the nation is really important. We do a huge amount of work across Wales in schools through our FinEd programs, our financial education programs, and, you know, we have an ambition to expand that even further. We now have a kind of a savings education app that young people are able to download, which, you know, I think goes alongside and provides wider support. I think, you know, I think clearly clearly, and with a kind of a FinTech Wales hat on, we're having a number of conversations with Welsh Government now in terms of how do we embed that even further into the curriculum. And, you know, it's a challenging conversation, because if you embedded everything that everyone wanted to embed into the curriculum, I think, you know, our children will be at school probably 20 plus hours a day. But we recognize that, it's really important. And I think, that needs to start at a younger age and continue throughout that educational experience and into university. And, we know that we've got young people coming out of university that still don't really understand the realities of financial management or managing their money effectively. And so, I think in Wales we're doing a good job, and I'm really, really proud to be involved in a number of kind of different initiatives. But I think there's a lot more that we can be doing, certainly. And
interesting to hear about that Savers Education app. I'll go and check that out. Thank you. Tegid, I'm going to come to you. There's a comment from Chris Thomas from Planet and Katie Fowler, who've both raised the issue of investments and what banks do with our money. So they've highlighted investment in local community institutions and divestment from fossil fuels. Just out of interest, and I saw in the chat, there was a question about how you get pension funds away from that as well. And the IW actually published a paper calling on local authority pension funds to divest from fossil fuels, I think 3 years ago. And as a result, the Future Generations Commissioner picked up on that. We're starting to see that. We have already started to see that divestment and reinvestment in renewables, which is what we wanted. But could you tell me a little bit about, do you think community banking is going to be much more likely to invest in this value-orientated way, bearing in mind the principles and the values on which you are being founded? And can we get mainstream institutions to do the same?
We can get mainstream institutions to do the same is above my pay level.
Is above your pay level, Teddy, surely.
Yeah, when you're doing it for free, certainly. Bank Cambria will have a policy to invest locally. So we will have, in time, we'll have a small business account. We will have small business loans. And I'm hugely, hugely keen on developing Welsh businesses. I'm also hugely keen on developing the cooperative movement in Wales as well, because ownership is really important. One area of the Development Bank of Wales that I would like to see increased is the amount of money that's available to cooperatives and turning businesses that are just about to be sold in a trade sale into cooperatives. So, that's an entirely new area. We can discuss that another time. But I would be very keen for Bank Cambria to have a cooperative focus. There's no doubt about it. We make sure that I can keep the money in Wales as much as we possibly can.
Part of that missing middle conversation, lots more S's rather than the M's and the E's. Yes. I'm conscious of time, it's 5 to 12. I'm just going to note a couple of other comments that have come through. So Sarah, whichever one you are, head of fundraising for Marie Curie in Wales, has talked about the closure of branches across Wales having a significant impact on volunteers banking income from activities such as collecting tins and buckets and that kind of stuff. John Ashton has asked, and Alex Bird has also raised this issue around Welsh language issues is in the provision of banking services. Is the problem a lack of skills in the profession? And I wonder, Ben, if that's something I can come to you on from the point of view of somebody already in the banking system, the kind of the language issue there. I know there have been some conversations in the chat already.
And so what's the specific question? Is that a challenge, the language barrier?
Yeah. Is the problem a lack of skills in the banking profession, Welsh language skills?
Look, I mean, I can't talk for other institutions necessarily, but I know that we as principality, we have a number of bilingual speakers. All our communications on our website and to customers, depending on their needs, is going out bilingually as well. And so it's something that we're certainly very, very aware of. I think in a wider context, people have different perspectives on the Welsh language, but it's certainly a fundamental part of our history and heritage, and something that we want to retain for forever. And so we as an organisation and our colleagues on this call and across the nation have an important role to play within that, certainly.
Strong defensive at that. Okay, there's another point here from Mark White of Smart Money Cymru Credit Union. We talked about credit unions a little bit today. We pointed out that they are moving into the digital space as well, offering loans online and offering transactional services online. How do these different institutions interact? Are there forums for discussion? I guess, Tegid, maybe that's one for you in that kind of developmental phase.
Yes, absolutely. If we can support the credit unions in what they do, then we're happy to. We've had many conversations with the credit unions in Wales. We don't see ourselves in competition with them. We see ourselves in competition with the large global banks. I don't see us as being in competition with the principality or the building societies either. Our competition is the large global banks, because they are the ones who are reducing services in Wales and extracting cash from Wales, cash that could be better placed and used in Wales. I'm not against profit and I'm not against shareholders in particular, but banking has been a fundamental problem in the UK for at least 20 years now. From the banking crisis onwards, I mean, we should have learned some things here. And the fact that Wales hasn't had its own bank with a proper current account is a little bit of a disgrace, really. Mark Hooper and myself are fundamentally keen on getting this going.
Yeah. And I can to hear make that loud sure, and clear.
Really, really, you know, really passionate about this. Mm-hmm. I've had, you know, lots of difficult times with banks over the years when my wife became ill, and this is that we will have our revenge.
And on that note, I'm going to start wrapping things up. There's a conversation that's come through about cash. I'm afraid we won't have time to address that. I just want to say thanks very much indeed for everybody joining the conversation today. I know there's been lots of stuff in the chat, so we'll just keep that open for a little bit so you can catch up on that. I'd really like to thank our panelists for giving us their time today. So Tegid Roberts, to Ben Joachim and to Valentine Mulholland. Thank you very much indeed, Jochen Vaar. If you also want to receive early notification of all IWA events and recordings of all of our Rethinking Wales sessions, please do join us as a member, and a member of the team is going to put that link in the chat now. Membership is really important to us. It allows us to do things that others can't, won't, and aren't able to do because of vested interests. We don't have those vested interests. We can say what we want, when we want, how we want, to whom we want. It also means that you too can play your own part in supporting an open, politically independent and constructive organisation at a critical juncture for Wales. We don't represent a sector, trade or interest. And I think that's what's been really interesting about these Rethinking Wales sessions over the past year. So thank you very much indeed for attending, and we look forward to seeing you again soon. We're currently shaping up our events programme for the next year, 18 months. We're really interested to hear what you would like us to focus on as well. So a very short survey is going to appear in the chat, so do please fill it in if you get the chance. In the meantime, we have one more Rethinking Wales session before we break for the summer. So do please keep the morning of Thursday, the 8th of July, free. Jochen Vaar, everybody, and thank you.